Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop, and I am pleased tonight to serve up award-winning author Terry Shames, author of the Samuel Craddock series on the Blue Plate Special. She grew up in Texas, and that's where her series is set, in the fictitious town of Jarrett Creek. And it's based on the fascinating people, landscape, and culture of the small town where her grandparents came from. But now, these days, she lives in Berkeley with her husband and two rowdy terriers, and her son Jeffrey also lives in Los Angeles, where he works in social media. She's president of the NorCal Sisters in Crime and is on the board of the NorCal Mystery Writers of America. How are you doing tonight, Terry?
I'm doing great, but after that intro music, I feel like I ought to be singing some blues song instead.
Welcome to the diner.
Thank you.
And you have, how many books are there in the Craddock series now?
The seventh one just came out. It's amazing.
And what's the name of that one?
Okay, this is A Reckoning in the Backcountry. And I have to tell you something funny. Only after the book was completely, the title was all set, and then I saw that Louise Penny's book was called Reckoning, and something with Reckoning. I thought, oh, everybody's going to think I copied it, but I didn't.
Nah. I think Louise copied you. Now that's my story.
Oh, that's probably
it.
I doubt it.
Why don't you tell us, when did the new book come out?
It came out just last week. I had my launch party Thursday night at a local bookstore, and we just had a ball. It was really wonderful. I was interviewed by Tim Hallinan, which I think you had him on your show, last week?
No, I haven't had Tim on yet. Tim's been on Pam's show.
Oh, Pam's show. Okay, well, anyway, that was a lot of fun. We had a good time.
Oh, I can imagine. He is a blast to talk to.
He's wonderful.
So what's the new one about?
Well, the new one is about, okay, I have to back up here. I had some shoulder surgery that went bad, and I said to myself, you know, I want to kill this doctor. So I said, well, I don't want to spend the rest of my life behind bars, so I'm going to kill him in a book. So I started working on this book, and I said, okay, what is the worst death I could have for this guy? And I realized that I had for years been wanting to write about dog fighting in small towns in the South, and particularly in Texas. And I thought, well, what about if there was a dog fighting theme and this guy was killed by dogs? And that's what, it's very brutal. It's sort of a departure from some of my books. And so I decided I also had to have some softer things in it. So I think it's a good balance. People seem to really be enjoying the book. So I think it was Kirkus who said, a brutal but enjoyable read. And I'm thinking, that's sort of an odd thing to say.
Like, for example, what's a softer thing that's going to balance being, you know, eaten by feral dogs?
Samuel gets a puppy.
Aww.
And that was so funny because I kept having to remind myself as I was writing, I kept saying, now, wait a minute, Samuel's got the puppy. I have to figure out what he's going to do with the puppy here. He can't just leave the puppy sitting there doing nothing. So I kept doing it. And at one point I said, there's too much about the puppy in here. So I sort of pared some things out. Anyway, it was fun to write about the puppy.
Oh, it's hilarious writing about dogs in books. And, yes, you do have to keep track of them. I learned that one the hard way.
Yeah.
And what also kind of puppy does Samuel get?
Well, it's a mutt. But here's the thing. I had a little contest on Facebook about what the dog's name should be. And someone said Dusty. I said, that's great. That's perfect. So I thought, okay, so it'll be a little Weimaraner. And I talked to an owner of a Weimaraner, and he said, no. He said, Weimaraners are really high-strung. It would not be a good dog for Samuel Craddock. So I decided to make him a mutt. And now it turns out he's part Australian Shepherd, and he's spotted. So I don't know. Dusty's going to be an odd name for him, but that's his name.
That's
he won
perfect.
The contest. Huh?
That's absolutely perfect. In my book, my main character has a little chihuahua because I have chihuahuas.
Oh, I love chihuahuas.
So Simon kind of he's like the soccer ball in Castaway. It's somebody for her to talk to when she's by herself.
Oh, that's
yeah.
sweet.
So that's still, so that's totally fun. And now as you work into the next book, you have to have Dusty.
Oh, I'm already a third of the way into the new book. And, of course, Dusty is 6 months older, and he's going through adolescence. You know how dogs go through this time when they're just like an adolescent child. So there are issues here and there, but, of course, they're bonded by now.
That's awesome. No, and that actually is a really good foil for your character and kind of a neat piece of character development.
Well, there's another soft part in the book, and that is that Samuel gets a new main squeeze.
Samuel's got a girlfriend?
Yeah, he's had a girlfriend for a long time, and it's horrible to say, and I'm sure that I may lose readers over this, but I got tired of her, so I decided to kick her up to the curb and bring in somebody new. So it's fun. I had a good time doing it.
Well, and that kind of raises up to the next question of, you know, you're on the seventh book with the same set of core characters.
Yeah.
And like with his girlfriend, you know, they can't just date forever.
No, they can't.
They've either got to get married or they got to break up. And it sounds like you had them break up.
Well, my husband just finished the book, and he said, you know, you left us dangling a little bit. And I said, yeah, I did. So we'll see what happens. You know, you can't make those decisions. I think you have to let readers, I as a reader, like to be left dangling and thinking, well, you know, which way is it going to go? And, you know, it kind of is the way real life is. You just don't know.
And how have you taken Samuel, you know, what's kind of been his journey, his character development journey through this series?
Well, the first book, it was interesting. I was finished with the first book before I really thought about what the book was about. And it was about the fact that Samuel's wife had just died, and he was unsure what to do with himself after that. He was kicking around. He was, you know, he was no longer chief of police and hadn't been for a long time. But in the first book, one of his friends gets killed, and he feels like the man who is chief of police is really not up to the job. So he takes care of it. And then the same thing happens in the second book. And I thought by then, I said, you know, I don't want Samuel to be an amateur at this. He's been a chief of police before, and I want him to get back in the job. And about that time, the city of Vallejo, California went bankrupt, and I thought, oh, what if Jarrett Creek went bankrupt? And they asked him to be the chief of police. So after that, he became the chief of police. And from there, it's just been that he's settled into the job, and he's an older protagonist. So, I wasn't sure how long he was going to keep it up, and now he has a new sidekick. Her name is Maria Trevino. And it sort of evolves from there. What always fascinates me is every time I start to write the book, I realize these characters have been busy while I've been gone. And it always amazes me what they're up to.
So about how much of a time period is there between books? Are they one after the other, you know, in kind of real time? Or has time gone by?
I think of them as being about 6 months apart. And that wasn't anything that I actually set up. It was just that, you know, I would think about the last one. Like, for example, this last book was set around Thanksgiving. And for some reason, when I started the new book, I thought, well, it's spring. It's about around April. So it wasn't anything, like I said, I didn't sit down and plot that out. It's just that when things start up, it's as if I've gone on for 6 months or 9 months since I wrote the last one. And so Samuel has gone on that long. Yeah.
Well, and like you said, they've been busy. You know, Jarrett Creek hasn't been sitting around waiting for you to get back on the computer.
Exactly. And sometimes I'm surprised at the things that have gone on while I've been away. It just sort of amazes me. I think, well, oh, my goodness, what did you do?
That's great. Do you find yourself having any continuity, you know, issues, keeping track of what all these people are doing?
Oh, yes. I don't have trouble with continuity with people, because in each book, I feel like I know who the really main characters are and what they're up to, and I sort of bring in some of the characters that have been in the background in each book because I'm interested in what they're up to. So, no, I don't have any because I feel like they're living real lives the way a real person lives a life. You know, for example, Jenny, who is Samuel's next-door neighbor, has gone through all kinds of things, and in the fourth book, she went through a real trauma. And then after that, and during that time, she met a man who she was fond of, and they have moved on together, and Samuel knows them, and they are both in this book. So it's almost like knowing a real community of people.
No, that's great, and I enjoy series like that, where you can kind of... Because, again, it's not just character development for Samuel Craddock.
Right. It's for everybody. You know who really does a fabulous job of that is Deb Crombie. I mean, mm-hmm. every one of her books, she's, you know, the characters have moved on and you feel like you know them. I think that's a real, that's the way a series has to be. You can't just make it stagnant.
No, that's fantastic. And you mentioned something about your shoulder surgery.
Mm-hmm.
How's your hand doing?
You know, it's doing fine. It's not sure it's ever going to be totally pain-free because there was a lot of nerve damage. But I recently saw a doctor who said, you know, it's probably not going to get a lot better. And I said, oh, no, I'm not doing that. So I decided to start doing yoga. And I've been at it about 3 months, and I can already tell a difference. It's really... I think I just needed some, some flexibility, but also some strength. So, yeah, I'm a very positive-looking person, and I just feel like, you know, with all the things that people have, this is minor. You know, I think I'll have some friend who has something new, and I say, I'll take the hand.
Well, and given your attitude towards doctors after your surgery, another doctor telling you you couldn't do something. Isn't going to last very long, is it?
Right. Well, you know, that's the reason. I mean, when you see what happens to this doctor in the new book, you're going to say, okay, she got her revenge. In fact, when I was writing it, I made him so awful that halfway through I said, you know, he's so awful that readers are going to say, I don't care who killed him. Why wouldn't anybody care? So I decided I had to go back and give him a few interesting traits that were not bad.
And I totally understand that because there's usually a law enforcement bad guy in my books, and there's a reason for that. So I totally understand.
Right, right.
But you had to give him a redeeming quality or two.
He had to be a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because nobody is 1,000% awful.
Exactly.
All the time.
Well, and, a lot of people anyway.
Yeah, well, and as they say, even his, you know, his wife and mother loved him. So, no, that's fantastic. So what's going on right now? Are we into, are we into book number 8?
Yes, I'm working on book number 8, and it's going to be about Loretta, who is everybody's favorite character. Everybody loves Loretta. I love Loretta. So
well, she makes a mean cinnamon roll.
She does make a mean cinnamon roll, yeah. And this one's going to be about her, and what she gets up to in this is really interesting. And when I was doing research for it, I said, oh, my goodness, who knew? So I'm not going to say any more than that.
Not even a teeny hint.
Not even a teeny hint. Okay, I can give you one hint.
Ooh.
Loretta would like to meet someone. That's it. That's your hint.
You heard it here, everybody. The next book is about Loretta, and she wants to meet somebody.
Yeah.
No, it sounds like that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm enjoying writing it. You know, it's funny, though. You can't just make a book just about one subject. You have to have other things going on in the background. And in this particular book, I started doing the background, and I thought, oh, you know, that could actually be the main thing And then I figured out a way to integrate the two, so it's going to be very interesting. I think it'll be an interesting book. Yeah.
So you use subplots with the other characters in the town?
Oh, you bet. Yeah. I always think that.
In the new one, what's an example of one of the subplots?
Well, I've always had a character who irritates Samuel a little bit because he's a real gun nut. And, of course, Samuel, along with every other Texas male that I've ever heard of, doesn't really have anything against guns. He uses a gun himself. But he gets irritated because this guy's idea is that everything can be solved if you just carry a gun. And there's going to be something that goes on that you learn a little bit more about the guy and you have a little more regard for him. So it's a subplot that just comes up that's it amazes me the way the mind works. You know, mm-hmm. you're just riding along and all of a sudden something just pops in and you think, well, that is exactly what I needed at this moment. And that's what happened. I needed this guy to step up and have an interesting little thing happen, and he did. So, yeah.
Well, or something will happen early in the book that you don't even really think about.
Exactly.
And then it turns out to be some critical detail later on.
Exactly. And I don't, I keep thinking, how does the brain process that? Why? I've even had, this is so funny, I've even had things happen where I think, I know what I'll do. I'm going to put this in there so that this, so that this part of it will work right. And I go back and it's already there. It's just amazing to me. And I've completely forgotten. Yeah.
I was talking with Robert Gregory Brown on Facebook, and everybody was talking about kind of those moments in a book that basically save your plot.
Yeah. Yeah. I had one, I think it was the third one. What happened is the first two books were really easy to write. I just started writing, and it's like they just wrote themselves. Then I get to the third one, and I realize now the problem is I had a contract by then. And so I felt a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the end, and I said, this book makes absolutely no sense. It went off on such a tangent, and I had to go back and trace it and really go back and say, where did it go off the rails? And it turned out that I let a character sort of take over who wasn't that important. It wasn't even very interesting, but I got kind of caught up in her little story with her parents and blah, 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 blah. And then I had to go back and say, no, honey, that has nothing to do with this book. I had to just cut large swaths of it. But as soon as I cut it, then the real plot started really taking shape. So I think, that's what authors have to do.
No, that's very interesting. Or you go back in and you have to add a little subplot because you realize you left some question or some plot thread open.
Yeah, I've gotten to the end and said, well, whatever happened to this person? But I have editors who are really, who will not let me get away with that. And I actually have an agent who wants to read my books first, and she'll say, right here, this doesn't quite add up. And I just love that. It's just wonderful. And it's already been vetted by my writers group, and I've rewritten, and I've paid attention, and I've looked through it. So to me, that's the cautionary tale that people really need to have other eyes on a manuscript. You can't just put something out unless you're Michael Chabon or somebody. I suppose he does that.
Oh, no, definitely. Some of the questions I'll get back from beta readers just surprise the daylights out of me.
Right. Well, I had a beta reader once tell me something, and I said, no, that doesn't make any sense. She doesn't know what she's talking about, blah, 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 blah. But it nagged at me, nagged and nagged and nagged, and all of a sudden I said, oh, my word, if I were to flip this around so that the character has a different viewpoint about this and someone else has the viewpoint that she now has, it would be so much more interesting. And it was like a miracle. It really made such a huge difference.
That is fantastic. And do you find with your readers, like the comments you get. You said Loretta's a favorite character.
Yes. Yes.
Have readers like glommed on to other characters or rejected other characters in ways that kind of surprised you?
Not really. You know, people are crazy about Samuel Craddock, and that's who people really talk about is Samuel Craddock, and they like the other people in the town. I think of Loretta as being like the voice of the town. You know, she's like, in a way, I think of her as the Greek chorus. That
yeah,
she,
I can see that.
Yeah, that she represents what people are thinking, and Samuel depends on her. And one of the books, I sent her away, you know, so I thought, well, I'll write one without her. Oh, no, I couldn't do it. It just fell flat, so I had to bring her back.
Well, definitely, she's a very warm human aspect.
Well,
Craddock.
The thing is that she's not all great. She's a gossip, but what you find as you go through, and I have found this in life myself, is that there's some people who love to gossip, but get you down to the basics, they're not mean. They just like to know stuff. They like to know what's up with people, but if there's something really important that is going on, they have a real soft spot for people. So. And, you know, when Maria Trevino came in, I was surprised. I mean, as an author, I was surprised that she and Loretta became really good friends right away. I mean, that happened, and that was them. It wasn't me. I promise it wasn't me.
No, but that's great, because what it shows, too, is you're open to kind of letting the story flow wherever it goes.
Yes. I am, yeah.
So that leads to a question. Even though you're an extremely organized person, plotter or pantser?
A little of each. What happens is I usually think about, I realize it's funny because I have to think of some other stories, and I thought, well, how have I thought of all these stories? And I think every single one of them has jumped off from something real. Something that really happened that I knew about or that I heard about or that happened in this town, something real. Mm-hmm. And I just took that and ran with it and said, what's the core of this? So that's the way I work. I'll say, okay, well, this is going to be a story about this. And I just start writing, you know, here's what's happening. And then about 20,000 words, I suddenly step back and I say, okay, this is a nice start. But now what? So I then sort of think about where it's going to go to the end. And I couldn't say that I outline, but what I do is I write a couple of lines for each chapter that I think will come, or each, not even chapter, each point that will happen next. And it's just a, you know, it's a way of sort of giving myself a little panorama of it. And I don't have to stick to it. If something comes up that seems to be much meatier, then I can adjust that. But it's just a way of giving myself a little map. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like you say, well, I'm going to go visit this little town over here. And here I'm going to take the most direct route. And then you see a little signpost and it says, oh, you know, that has a snake museum over there. I think I'm going to go see it. You know?
Something shiny.
Yeah, something real. Yeah, big and shiny. Something interesting. And so that and you know, that's what I do is I let the little detours happen, but it gives me some map. Yeah, I know where I'm going.
Well, and on the wonky side, what would you say your word count is roughly in your books?
Oh, this is crazy. Okay, so. In the first book, probably my favorite line from a reviewer ever is the first person who reviewed the book said, there is not one wasted word in this book. And I have been really, I realize that's what I like. I like a very spare, I want everything to count. And mm-hmm. So I think the first one was about, I don't know, between 70 and 75. It was around 70-something mm-hmm. words. The last one was almost 90,000. And I kept thinking, you know, have you started being too wordy, and I think it's just that I have learned about development of subplots and how meaty those are and how important they are. So, yeah, I think that's it. Every book has gotten a little bit longer. So they're between 75 and 90, yeah.
And the reason I tied that back to, because you said, you know, you kind of write for about 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you know, using the basic formula, is you're roughly at the end of the first act, maybe a little bit into the second act at that point.
Oh, you know, I've never, this is so bizarre. I have never really understood the three-act thing. I mean, people explain it to me, I think, uh-huh.
No, you actually
what
do.
What I have, is that right? Oh, okay. It must be intuitive because I don't think that way. What I think of, when I'm reading a book, I can pretty much tell you where the middle of the book is even without knowing what the word count is, because there's always something that happens. This is true in a movie. It's true of everything. Something happens that just shifts everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I aim for, I guess, is that shift that suddenly, oh, look, you know, wait a minute, this is not what we thought it was going to be. And then things change. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about your 20,000 word, you know, where you start out. By the time you get to the end of that, you pretty much have your main characters laid out, and you kind of know, and you know what the stakes are.
Yes.
That's,
you know,
the
here's
first?
The thing. Here's the thing. Because I'm writing a series, I already know who my main characters are, and
mm-hmm.
and the secondary characters may come in and start having a real role, but then they drop away in the next book or whatever. So I already know who my characters are, and I think
mm-hmm.
that really it can be a double-edged sword. It can be really comforting to know who these people are, and as long as I don't forget who they are, which I'm having someone do a Bible for me because I realize that I sort of lose track sometimes of who people are. But it's the story that starts to really matter in that, because I know who the characters are. Yeah.
And that is interesting with series as opposed to standalone, or
uh-huh.
even taking a series character like Jack Reacher, but putting him in a completely different setting every book.
Yeah. Yeah. Put him in a dress.
I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
So what is kind of your writing process? You've told us a little bit about how the story develops, but are you an everydayer? Are you a word counter?
You know, I try to write 2,000 words a day when I'm really cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I chose that, but the way I work is that I prowl around. I'll do a little, I read political stuff and I write a raging letter to the New York Times, and then I look, do a little Facebook, and I work out, and I do this and that. And all that time, I'm prowling around mentally. And, in fact,
mm-hmm.
the last 2 days, I haven't been writing since the first of the year because I've just had a lot going on. And I've been prowling the last few days, and I realized I'm antsy. I'm getting more and more antsy. And suddenly what will happen every single day is I leap to the computer and I just start writing furiously, and I realize that all this time things have been processing in the back.
No, that's great.
Yeah, and then editing for me is much easier. The process of writing first draft is just, you know, it's so hard. But once you've got stuff on the page, you can see what you've got, and you can say, you know, this is lacking a little here, and you fill things in or you cut away. Yeah, that's, for me, the writing the first draft is really hard. And that's why I think I do 2,000 words a day. I have to see some real progress.
I've been in the – grinded out stage. It's like I'm extracting every word out of my skin. It's just been one of those times. And,
yes.
And if I could just get through this scene, I'll be fine type of thing. So I applaud your being able to write it out furiously.
And it's so fun. It may take me only 2 hours to write 2,000 words because once
That's
I start,
awesome.
I start writing like a mad woman. And I think it was, you know, after my hand was hurt, one of my books, I think it was the fifth one, I wrote entirely with my left hand.
Wow.
And people kept saying, you got to use Dragon. Bless my left hand's heart. It just, I was writing fast with just my left hand. And so I'm a very fast typist. And so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that's one reason I can do that many words.
I experimented with Dragon. And
you
it
what?
Has its uses.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, sorry. I've experimented with Dragon.
Oh, right. Yes.
And it has its uses.
Yeah, I think through my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I feel, is that when I see those words going out onto the page, my hands really notice that. They know what I'm doing.
Well, to switch gears a little bit, are you going to be heading out to any shows and cons this year?
Absolutely. I'm a real
like
fan
where?
Of Left Coast Crime is my favorite conference. BoucherCon is so different. The two are so different. Left Coast Crime is smaller and more intimate, and you know, it's here on the Left Coast, so it's people
mm-hmm.
I know. I really enjoy it. I go every year. I wouldn't miss it for anything. This year it's in Reno, and it's
mm-hmm.
going to be just terrific. And I will go to BoucherCon, and this year I'm going to Malice Domestic. I went the very first year. I had a book coming out in July, so I went in May, and I felt a little lost there because I didn't know people, and I just sort of, you know, I did not enjoy it. It wasn't for me. But this year, I feel like it's really going to be fun. Yeah.
Oh, it will be. You'll have a blast.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And I've been to Thriller Fest a couple. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I'm saying I look forward to seeing you at BoucherCon in Florida because we'll be there too, and the show will be there.
Oh, great. Well, you know, I hadn't signed up for it, but I'm doing a little book tour, and I thought, you know, I'd like to visit some friends in Florida. Maybe I'll go to a bookstore there, and a bookstore in St. Petersburg is going to host me for an event. And so, you know, I just thought, well, St. Petersburg, and everybody says it's such a nice little town, little city. And
mm-hmm.
so I said, well, why don't you just go to BoucherCon anyway?
Yay! I totally look forward to seeing you there.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
My big adventure this year is I am going to Thriller Fest.
Oh, are you? Have you been before?
No, I have not.
It's really amazing. I have been, I went 2 years in a row. I didn't go maybe 3 years. I can't remember. For debut authors, it is absolutely the most sterling experience. And 1 year I went to the FBI course that they have, and 1 year I did one of their workshops. The workshops are terrific. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I decided not to go this year for, you know, no particular reason. It's hot in July.
Mm-hmm.
you're going to love it. It'll be really fun for you.
I'll be this total Kansas rube in New York City. It'll be awesome.
Oh, I know, really, really, yeah.
Well, this has been fantastic talking to you.
Oh, it has been really fun.
I love hearing about other people's writing processes, and you've really given some good insight, too, into series characters.
Right.
And not only series characters, but series locations.
Yes, it's important. Location's important.
So let everybody make sure I get this correct here. The new book is A Reckoning in the Backcountry.
Yes.
And it is out and about.
It's what?
It's out and about. It's been released.
It's out and about. It was released on my son's birthday, which is January 9th.
Good. Mom gave him a book for his birthday.
Exactly.
It's been getting tremendous reviews.
Oh, thank you. It is getting good reviews. It was so hard to write because it was so intense that I wasn't sure what to expect of it, but I've been really surprised and happy with the results of the reviews. It got a starred review in Library Journal, which is great.
Well, and I love what our mutual friend Ms. McPherson says, where small towns and mysteries can be too cute or too weird to be true, but Jarrett Creek is the real deal, and Samuel Craddock is the jewel in his crown.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So she knows a thing or two about creating great characters herself.
Oh, does she ever.
So, please, I hope you'll come back on the show.
Well, thank you so much for hosting me.
And I look forward to seeing you at BoucherCon.
Look forward to meeting you. Okay.
And with that, I know you have guests coming, so I will say goodnight to you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Good night.
Thank you. And to let everyone know, this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to stay up to date with who is on the menu. With that, I'll say goodnight to everyone. Thank you.